You are listening to the Doug Hagmann Radio Show, weekdays 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And now the man behind the mic, a private investigator with over 30 years under his belt, Doug Hagmann.
Good morning, everyone. It's 6 a.m. on the west coast of America, 9 a.m. here in the east. Welcome to Hagmann. It's the Doug Hagmann Investigative Hour for today. It is Monday, September 25th, 2017. Thanks for joining me this morning. I'm going to take an in-depth look at tomorrow's headlines. I'm going to delve deep into the information behind the white noise of the entertainment spectrum. The stuff that we saw this weekend, taking a knee during the national anthem, of course, that to me is key to Obama's legacy. In other words, what we're seeing today with the NFL players taking a knee, and I'm just going to briefly touch on this because this is going to be discussed ad nauseum. But again, and I'll quote Greg Jackson, his reference to how in-depth things are covered. Just the media itself will cover this ad nauseum. However, it's the inch deep, mile wide type of coverage, not what is behind this and what is coming from this and what is responsible for this. This is going to be the first part of the program, just a small portion of the program, and then deeper issues as the program unfolds. And I want to thank, again, I want to thank everyone for joining me. I want to thank BTR, Blog Talk Radio Network, for hosting this program, as well as Global Star Radio Network. Thank you so much. And of course, you, the listeners, thank you. It seems as though the guests that we've had on the Hagmann Report, people like Charles Sasser and David Kapelian, the snapping of the American mind, Charles Sasser, crushing the collective. It seems as if the information they have written, they have provided on our program, the Hagmann Report, is coming to pass. We're seeing it unfold. But what we're seeing is something bigger than will be discussed by the corporate mass media. Trust me on this. This, the defiance, I don't know how else to describe this, the defiance by the NFL players, the disrespect shown by the NFL players is Obama's legacy. And this is important to understand. And as a matter of fact, I posted on my personal Twitter account, @HagmannPI. That's my personal Twitter account. I posted a graphic there. And I have to respond to this. I posted a graphic that is a four-paneled graphic. The first upper left is a picture of a woman sobbing over a flag-draped casket. The caption is, "This is why you don't step on the flag." And then to the right of that is a man, an Army vet in a wheelchair. "This is why you stand for the national anthem." And then, of course, a gravesite from the Civil War. "This is why we don't erase history." And then the final graphic or the final panel of the graphic, "You're not black, white, yellow, or brown. You're an American. Start acting like it." Now, for those in the West who are not American listening to this, you can apply this to your own country as well. If you're free listening to this, and you would be, then you can apply this to your own country as well. I had a response. Somebody had sent me this in response to that picture. "I'd rather worship Jesus." Okay, now, I am a Christian male. I'm an American male. I see nothing about worshiping the flag, nothing about idolatry here, nothing about anything but respect for the country that has allowed God-given freedoms to be implemented to the extent it has so far. However, this is something I'm seeing more and more by Christians. I'd rather worship Jesus. And then #idolatry. I said nothing about worshiping the flag. I said nothing about idolatry. But yet many Christians will adopt this insane approach. And I believe personally, this is my personal belief, that the two issues are not mutually exclusive. And so I responded back. And I don't get into Twitter fights. I find that just a waste of time. Because you're dealing with intellectual midgets, morons, more than likely. And, you know, however, I had to respond to that. And I said, I don't recall saying anything about worship. It's respect. To which that reply was, again, Jesus told us not to worship idols. Again, the mentality. I don't want to seem like I'm picking on this person. Because I don't want to do that. It is the mentality behind the sentiment of Christians today who believe that you cannot respect America, respect the flag, respect national sovereignty, respect the rule of law, and be a good Christian at the same time. That's got to stop. It's got to stop right now in order for the Christians to retake this country. That's my problem with that. That's my problem with that statement, that response. It has nothing to do with idolatry. It's about respect. But what we saw yesterday, what everyone's going to be talking about today, is that more than 150 players across the NFL could be seen kneeling or sitting in the 14 games that took place yesterday. And the mainstream media is calling this easily the largest such demonstration since former San Francisco 49ers Colin Kaepernick first began protesting in 2016. And the mainstream media also points out that one of the biggest protests took place in Washington, D.C., where almost the entire lineup of Oakland Raiders team sat on their bench ahead of their game with the Washington Redskins. And that the day of demonstrations began at the game in London in the U.K. between the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Baltimore Ravens at Wembley Stadium, where a large number of players from both teams knelt. In Nashville, we saw neither the Seattle Seahawks nor the Tennessee Titans observing the national anthem. One of the Seattle players said in a statement just right before kickoff, "We will not stand for the injustice that has plagued people of color in this country." This is, simply put, Obama's legacy. I lay this right at the feet of Obama. I lay this at the feet of Hillary Rodham Clinton and the Clintons, Valerie Jarrett, Bernie Sanders, Maxine Waters. These people are not Americans, in my view. These people, and most assuredly, Barack Hussein Obama, Barry Satoru. And this, to me, is why the vetting of Barack Hussein Obama was so important when Dr. Jerome Corsi was out talking about Obama's constitutional eligibility for holding the office of the president. And while we were out there, I was out there writing articles about my investigative results, and Susan Daniels, the PI, was investigating Obama's background and constitutional eligibility. It wasn't about anything more or anything less than the fact that the allegiance that he had was not to the United States, and hence not to the American people, not to our country. So, therefore, this is Obama's legacy, and everyone who supported Obama, you are responsible in part for this, what we're seeing today. Hard talk? Yep. Deservedly so. In a moment, I'm going to be talking more about the unmasking crimes that took place under Obama, the war by the shadow government and the deep state against Donald Trump. I'll be talking about that here momentarily. But I want to remain on this one topic before I get more into that. Because in everything we're seeing take place today is against the backdrop of this socialist mentality, this push for socialism. And by the way, Donald Trump, at his speech last week at the United Nations, said something that I think needs repeated and repeated and repeated. And I'm going to play a one-minute clip. That's it. One-minute clip from Donald Trump today about what he said at the United Nations that got a very lukewarm, tepid response by the United Nations, as I would expect. Anything less would be disingenuous. Because, you see, the United Nations is all about, of course, the collective. It's all about the one world global government. And I know that phrase has its pejorative connotations to it, negative connotations to it. People hear that and they say, oh, well, you're just some wingnut, you know. No, it's all about the implementation of socialism as a stepping point to communism in this country, in America. They need the socialists, the communists need to take out America. The reason America is the stumbling block, the speed bump on the road to complete communist dictatorship worldwide. That's it. Simple as that. You can go back into the middle of the last century, you know, Cleon Skousen, his works exposing these tactics, exposing this objective to more modern day authors. Again, I submit to you Charles Sasser, an extremely important book, Crushing the Collective. David Kapelian, The Snapping of the American Mind. Both, by the way, you can get those at WND. If you go to WND Superstore and enter the promo code Hagman, just go ahead and do that. These are two great books, and they speak to where we're at today. But this is Obama's legacy. This is Hillary Clinton's legacy. If Hillary Clinton were in office right now, as opposed to Donald Trump, this would be the norm. In fact, I'm not even sure the national anthem would be played at games or sung at games. But moving to what I said earlier, let me play this one-minute clip from Donald Trump, because I think this says it all. Out of everything he said at the United Nations about Iran and North Korea, this to me is most important, because this strikes at the very heart of everything that we're seeing take place. Go ahead and roll the clip. Roll clip one.
The problem in Venezuela is not that socialism has been poorly implemented, but that socialism has been faithfully implemented. From the Soviet Union to Cuba to Venezuela, wherever true socialism or communism has been adopted, it has delivered anguish and devastation and failure. Those who preach the tenets of these discredited ideologies only contribute to the continued suffering of the people who live under these cruel systems. America stands with every person living under a brutal regime. Our respect for sovereignty is also a call for action. All people deserve a government that cares for their safety, their interests, and their well-being, including their prosperity.
The problem with Venezuela is not that socialism has been poorly implemented. The problem is that socialism has been faithfully implemented. And did you hear the response? Did you hear that response after that statement? Because there's no denying that. There's no denying that concept. And I'm going to thank Eric the Tech. Thank you so much for that, my brother. Appreciate you finding that and isolating that. But to me, this is exactly what is the agenda of the progressive left. They're not progressives. They're communists. They're socialists hoping to implement a communist dictatorship, basically, in the United States. That's their objective. That's the Sanders objective. Everyone who is so, oh my goodness, I love Bernie Sanders. It's change, and Bernie Sanders, he got the election stolen from him. Well, thank God. At least in this case. Not that the election or the nomination was stolen from him, but thank God that he's not in office as the President of the United States. And Hillary Clinton, of course, would be much worse. She's just an avowed communist Maoist, understanding her politics. Yet people don't understand this. The Hillary worshipers, the Sanders worshipers. Oh. But this, what Donald Trump stated, that's what this is all about. And I really would like people to understand this. This is the bullet that we dodged last election. By the grace, in my view, by the grace of God. And through the hard work of many people that supported the Making America Great Again agenda. Now, is it working well? It's got problems. It's got many problems, some of which I'm going to be talking about as this program unfolds, including the Sessions Justice Department. What is he doing? If you've been following Judicial Watch, if you've been looking at the documents they've uncovered or have been restricted or disallowed from uncovering by the Sessions Justice Department lawyers, you have to ask yourself, what in the world is going on here? Whose side are they on? But again, the overview, the macro lens, and I'm going to be getting into the Samantha Power issue as well. I'm going to be getting into the spying issue as well. Because this does strike close to home. And all of this together that we're seeing today is a country divided. We're seeing the results, some of the results, in the form of taking a knee or not bother showing up. And I know Sean Hannity says, he does not urge boycotts and whatever, but I'm going to tell you something. If everyone just stopped going to football games and every one of these games were these players' protests, then they wouldn't be making the millions of dollars that they're making. And what kind of insane world is it when the feelings or the sentiment of a football player is more important than the elected leadership? And it just maddens me to think that many grown men in America actually know more about a player's statistics or a game or a team statistics in the NFL or some major league game than they do social issues, social studies. They could name a player's batting average or a player's whatever a lot quicker than they could even identify the president, vice president, or members of Congress. Man, there's something wrong with that picture. I don't mind people following baseball as entertainment or football as entertainment. But when you lose, when the average American male loses the sight of what's important and gets lost in this nothing but entertainment mentality, it's sad. You're men. Act like men. And if you're married to someone like that, tell them to act like a man. My goodness. You know, author David Kapelian, in his book Snapping of the American Mind, talks about Bizarro. I don't follow comics, but, you know, the opposite of Superman and Bizarro world. And that against, or that as compared to, or analogous to the United States of America. And, of course, looking at today's country, the United States today, it increasingly resembles a bizarro version of traditional America. It's not just different, not just transformed, but America has morphed in many ways into the opposite of what it was in the previous generation and previous generations. You know, the 1950s, the America as we once knew it, despite its numerous shortcomings, was a confident, prosperous, overflowing with life, hope, unlimited opportunity nation. People, they were patriotic, and our culture was strong, essentially moral. If you remember, if those listening remember that, the country of the 1950s, people were patriotic. Our culture was strong, moral. America was the undisputed leader of the world. I'm not talking militarily necessarily or economically, but in terms of freedom and generosity. Now, and David Kapelian writes this again in his book, citing his book, Snapping in the American Mind. He notes in his book to his liberal friends, do me a favor and don't tell me, but the 50s had racial segregation. Yes, and today we dismember, poison vacuum crush the skulls of, and chemically burn or decapitate 3,000 beautiful human babies every single day. And I like that response. Compared with, the shining and vibrant nation we once were, today's America, just by virtue of seeing what we saw yesterday, has become a different country altogether, deeply and angrily divided, unable to deal with crises, whether they're foreign or domestic. We are the world's greatest debtor nation. We have become the world's greatest debtor nation, with 50 million people on food stamps. There is rampant divorce, family breakdown, unprecedented sexual anarchy, with 110 million with sexually transmitted diseases, 110 million, almost 60 million who abuse alcohol, and over 70 million taking mood, mind-altering drugs. On so very many levels, America is becoming even more bizarro, which is to say diametrically opposed to logic and common sense. And of course, this from David Kapelian, The Snapping of the American Mind. But to really understand what's taking place today, to really understand why we saw what we saw yesterday, I truly believe that you've got to look at the larger picture. We need to transcend the usual right and left, the Republican and Democrat. I'm not talking about the bigger picture of good versus evil, or the bigger even, or the bigger picture of progressive or communist versus the freedom lovers. But we just can't be stuck in that Republican-Democrat cycle, because that's not politics as usual. All right? You've got to look much further. You've got to avoid the inch-deep-mile-wide analysis that will be ever so prevalent today by the American media and by the Western media. And continuing to cite David Kapelian, you know, he also notes that although America's bizarre transformation, it's been in progress for decades, it really burst into full bloom during the age of Obama. And this is what, again, I go back to 2007, the vetting of Obama, how Obama was selected and placed into office, voted into office, sold, packaged by the American media, by the Western media. You know, if you go back to the 2008 presidential election, you saw a country electrified by this soaring rhetoric of a little-known freshman Illinois senator named Barack Hussein Obama, who I still can't believe, on a personal note, 7 years after 9/11, which an attack allegedly, reportedly, ostensibly carried out by Muslim Islamic terrorists. And that's a topic, of course, I'm not going to get into right now. There's nothing really known about this guy, this junior senator, freshman Illinois senator. But once you peel back the glitz and glamour and the layers of, the shiny trinkets and the interesting way that he spoke and the bill of goods that he sold everyone, once you dig deep, you can see that his background, disturbing to say the least, the communists in his life, including but not limited to Frank Marshall Davis, the terrorists in his life, including but not limited to William Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, the criminals such as Tony Rezko, with all having rabid anti-American beliefs, including as well anti-American racists such as Jeremiah Wright. Oh, my goodness. Not to mention Obama's himself, his Islamic, his Muslim education in Indonesia, and his hardcore Marxist orientation in college. But somehow, the American public was mesmerized by the prospect of having a first black president. Well, that's a lie too, but the establishment media couldn't be bothered and wouldn't be bothered, and in fact were ordered to stand down to investigate Obama's qualifications to lead America and the free world. In fact, it was just the opposite. He was the object of near unanimous worship by the major media, by the corporate mass media. Now, when you compare that to what happened back then with Sarah Palin, of course, who I'm really not that big of a fan of, the junior half of the GOP ticket opposing Obama in 08, compare that to how she was treated. Now, she was portrayed as a very normal American with strong Judeo-Christian values. She had grown up bold and outspoken enough to challenge local political corruption. She became elected, she was elected mayor. And she later became a popular governor of Alaska. But once she was tapped by Senator John McCain to become the Republican vice presidential candidate, something happened. Everyone ignored Obama in terms of his subversive background. In the media, what they did was they sent attack teams to Alaska, dumpster diving for dirt on Palin, investigating who paid for the tanning bed she had installed in the governor's mansion. And she did. And she did pay for it, by the way. And whether she's actually the mother of her youngest son, Trigg. And she is. But even it just became even more bizarre. Once election day arrived and the Republicans lost, you know, one would think the attacks would have ended, especially after Sarah Palin resigned the governorship in mid-2009. And that in the face, by the way, of nonstop harassment. She had no official power any longer. But what happened? The hatred grew. And if you look at some of the Twitter comments, and this I'm going to directly quote from, again, David Kapelian's Snapping of the American Mind. Consider some of these comments, 2011 Twitter comments made about Palin. This is 2 years, 3 years really after the campaign and 2 years after the election. But think about these statements. Join us in praying to God that Sarah Palin contracts cancer and dies. Another one. My hatred for Sarah Palin continues to grow. I think this woman should be assassinated. Another one. I hope Sarah Palin dies a slow and painful death. Another one. I hope she dies gnashing her teeth. And it goes on and on and on and on. Now, I'm not bringing back ancient history for not. There's a purpose here, because this is the outgrowth, or that has grown into what we're seeing today. It's much deeper. The division in this country is much deeper than we've ever seen, at least since the Civil War. And then when you move to, for example, Charles Sasser, the author of Crushing the Collective, and even if you go to William Murray, for example, Utopian Road to Hell, citing, by the way, Utopian Road to Hell, excellent book, fighting the utopian lie. It's in Utopian Road to Hell, author William Murray describes the totalitarian, well, all of the totalitarians throughout history, and the current utopians who are determined to control the lives of every person on Earth, especially here in America. And he talks about, and he writes about from vicious tyrants like Hitler and Stalin to the social engineering of Woodrow Wilson and Barack Hussein Obama. Murray masterfully educates in his book, Utopian Road to Hell. He educates readers about the utopian's swath of destruction in history and warns of the dangers of present-day utopians fighting to hold power. And this is exactly what Donald Trump said in his UN speech. In that little snippet that we played, this is exactly what he's talking about. The communists in our country, just to name one body, one august body of communists, of course, the Congressional Progressive Caucus, of which, for example, Bernie Sanders has headed, Senator Bernie Sanders. Maxine Waters is a part of. The Congressional Progressive Caucus right now, it's got 71 members at present. And that number varies according to congressional eras. But regardless of how they might refer to themselves, progressives, for example, Democrats, these socialists / communists have no place in government whatsoever in the United States of America. And again, citing William J. Murray, that they may call themselves liberals, progressives, socialists, or even communists. But if their stated goal is social justice or economic justice or any form of collective punishment based on religion, race, or economic standing, they present a danger to freedom. Whether you are listening to this broadcast in the United States of America, Canada, the UK, Australia, any free country, these people are a threat to you. And especially to those people here in America, of course. And this is what we saw yesterday. On display is this implementation of the progressive, socialist, communist form of social justice, this their method of saying, oh, it's bad, it's terrible, I'm not going to stand for it, I'm not going to stand for this, therefore I'll kneel. And this is the sum total, the end result, I argue, I assert, this is what we saw yesterday, is the symptom, manifestation of 8 years of Barack Hussein Obama, of years of Clintons, really a decade of Clintons, and even the acquiescence of George W. Bush, although described as a neocon, certainly a member, I would say, of the globalist-style government. Those labels don't count anymore in terms of just being a so-called Republican conservative. You have to look at their actions, not their titles. Now, consider the danger to freedom. Think about this. And now, again, I'm citing William Murray, for example, in his book, Utopian Road to Hell. He makes a great point in this. And I'm not going to read this, but he makes a great point. He talks about those who would, for example, restrict jobs based on race in the name of some misguided view of justice. He says that they're no less racist and intolerant than the KKK, for example, but far more dangerous because often they have obtained positions of power. And this is so true. They have a worldview that is opposed to the American Constitution and the Founding Fathers' vision for a society free of governmental coercion of the individual. Again, it doesn't matter which country you're listening to this, and I've got listeners in Canada, and thank you so much, and all over the world. If you're listening to this in a free country, I'm talking about your leaders too. Now, if you think about let's take it one step further. And again, Mr. Murray cites this as well in his book, Utopian Road to Hell, WND Superstore. But this got me thinking to what I saw yesterday. If you look at the misguided passage, now this is a couple of years ago, you might recall this, of a Houston, Texas ordinance that would allow men to enter women's restrooms at any time if they would consider themselves to be a woman. If they identified that particular day as a woman, they can go into a women's restroom. This was the misguided passage of a Houston, Texas ordinance. Yes, it passed. Age was not taken into consideration in the ordinance. And consequently, think about this. An adult male claiming to feel like a female that day would be permitted to walk into a restroom full of young girls. This in itself would seem... Is that a good idea? No, that's a bad idea. But here's what we're seeing in a larger scale today. What happened in Houston, we're seeing in a larger scale today. When Christian pastors in the city of Houston attempted to obtain an initiative on the ballot to strike down the ordinance that was happened to be promoted by the lesbian mayor and her, quote, wife, end quote, religious freedom came under direct assault. In fact, the lesbian mayor demanded in court copies of sermons with the intent of taking away the 501c3, the tax exemption of churches that disagreed with her homosexual transgendered agenda. Now, you see how this is working. Suddenly, the concept of religious freedom and freedom of speech was to be tossed aside in the name of social justice on behalf of the LGBT movement. Now, do you see how this works? And I think that this is an important distinction here, a very important aspect of what we're seeing today, of what we're seeing play out. And you know what, by the way, I would urge everyone to, the three books I mentioned, including Utopian Road to Hell, of which I'm currently referencing William Murray, WND Superstore. It's a fantastic book. You know, William Murray talks about this not just being within the federal government, but there is a cadre of anti-freedom zealots who work day and night to undermine the liberties outlined in the United States Constitution. And I can guarantee you where you're at, whether it's the UK, Canada, working day and night to overtake your freedoms, take your freedoms away. But even at the city and county levels, those who wish, for example, to transform our nation into a tightly controlled society, conformed to their vision of justice and perfection, work toward central planning, for example, communists that would rule from the moment of birth, if in fact birth is even allowed, depending on your status, color, and what have you, And until the day that you die. It has become too expensive, by the way, in some cases, to keep the individual alive, but that's another matter. But on the federal level, there are individuals who want almost unlimited power for this, who wanted unlimited power for Obama, and if you think about it, to ignore the Constitution, and he ruled in large part by executive action and executive order. Two separate things, distinctly different. In Congress right now, they are the same individuals who would do anything to stop the agenda of a president promoting free enterprise and true racial equality. This is what we're seeing take place in the agenda, in the anti-Trump agenda. Trust me when I tell you, this is exactly what we're seeing, an outgrowth of the indoctrination from our schools, but especially using the mass media, the corporate mass media, as a tool under the Obama regime, under the Clinton regime. This has been long in the works, and we find ourselves at this point today. And these federal-level utopians, communists, they can be easily identified. For example, in Congress, and I spoke about this before, they can, in Congress, for example, in our Congress, in the United States of America, they can be found proudly exhibiting themselves in the Congressional Progressive Caucus, the CPC. And I had mentioned this before, the CPC, the Congressional Progressive Caucus, which has 71 declared members, 69 voting representatives, one non-voting delegate, and one senator, that, of course, being Bernie Sanders. And the Sanders worship and such, and Hillary Clinton worship and such. But the CPC would be considered the socialist wing of the Democratic Party. In my view, it is the absolute communist initiative embraced by these 71 individuals. They work hand in glove, by the way, with the Institute for Policy Studies, the IPS, which is nothing more, nothing less than a radical organization promoting communist collectivism, whatever you want to call it. But it's communist to its core. With the Democratic Socialists of America, it's considered an ally by the Communist Party USA. Many of the far-left radical groups in the United States have links from their internet sites to the CPC. And let us not forget, the CPC was founded in 1991 by then House Rep Bernie Sanders of Vermont. And he's now a senator, of course, a failed presidential candidate. But look at the influence. Look at the followers. And I would say this, if you consider yourself a lover of freedom in America and you are a Sanders supporter, a Sanders follower, man, you've got something there. In my opinion, there's a bipolar issue going on there somewhere. You can't have both. And let me give every listener a warning right now. The next presidential election will include a member of the congressional, the CPC, the Congressional Progressive Caucus, if not one who embraces all tenets of that organization. Trust me when I tell you that this agenda is alive and well and throughout the United States and worldwide. Again, go back and listen to that little snippet that from Donald Trump saying, this is so true that Venezuela is not an example of failed socialism, but actual socialism, period. That's so important to understand. But you're going to see in future and in the next presidential elections, but even more importantly, in the midterms, you're going to see the Congressional Progressive Caucus, these centralists, these utopians, these communists doubling down, and even at the even the appointees as well, you're going to see the infiltration of these communists within our government system. And again, if you're listening to this in Canada, Australia, wherever, in your country, you're seeing this already. In free Western Europe, no longer so free. You've seen this and you've experienced this. And how is that working out for everyone? Not too well, I contend. And don't forget, some of the things that have been done by these members in the name of equality and justice, taking a knee or not showing up for the anthem yesterday, that's the symptom, or that is that's the visible component to what has gone on here in the last several decades, but especially in the last decade under Obama, in the name of equality and justice. In fact, the individuals have gone so far as to protect and to promote Muslim terrorists. For example, in 2013, CPC, that organization was co-chaired by Keith Ellison, the Muslim communist, a congressman from Minnesota. Ellison, look at his close ties to the Council on American Islamic Relations, which is a Muslim Brotherhood front. And his co-chair, by the way, I can't think of his name right now. He has ties to the American Southwest, the Mexican initiatives, La Raza and such. But they both have expressed hatred for some of America's most basic institutions, as they believe they are fundamentally unjust. And that's what we saw yesterday. That's the visible component of what we saw yesterday. In fact, former Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi was a member of the Congressional Progressive Caucus as late as 2012. But she dropped out, and she's more kind of a covert asset for that agenda regardless. You know, again, at its core, what we saw yesterday, taking a knee or not showing up, most of those in the Congressional Progressive Caucus are also members of the Congressional Black Caucus. And they claim to be this group for African-American congressmen, though no black Republican congressman or senator have ever been members of the Congressional Black Caucus. And there's a reason for that. Mostly from inner cities, the congressmen in the CBC are, for the most part, assorted Marxists, socialists, self-proclaimed progressives, and even communists who seek the destruction of free enterprise. And they want to replace our system with one that creates, and I'm quoting now from William Murray, social and economic justice. And although the vast majority of Americans are against abortion on demand, for example, and against homosexual marriage, as a group, the CBC promotes this cultural revolution that includes legalization of homosexual marriage and protecting abortion on demand. And they're working to expand the welfare state, and they're promoting this racial divide with racial quotas. This is not about fairness. It has nothing to do with fairness. And men, individuals yesterday watching this display, this amateurish sophomoric display by the NFL players, come on. But see, the media, and this is the reason I'm focused on this today, is the corporate mass media. The talking heads are not going to tell you why they did this, with the exception of, well, they're protesting the social injustices, period. But dissecting that statement, dissecting the agenda, behind the agenda, most importantly, is this communist agenda. And if you don't believe me, all you have to do is study, look, research, do your own research. Understand what we're seeing. And understand that we live in so perilous times today. America has never been more divided than it is today. The cause, the most recent cause, I assert, Barack Hussein Obama, Hillary Clinton, and their policies of destruction, their shredding of the Constitution. That's what we're seeing. And that's why it's so important, in my view. You know, moving on, though, in part and parcel to this, it somewhat being shielded by this display yesterday by NFL players, more important issues. Samantha Power, for example. I'm going to toss out a number, 260. Do you know what that is? That's the number. That's how many times Samantha Power, the ambassador, former ambassador, I should say, to the United Nations under Obama, reportedly requested the names of American citizens who were included in intelligence report covering foreign officials. Okay? So, 260 times Samantha Power, the ambassador to the United Nations under Obama, requested the names of American citizens who were included in intelligence reports covering foreign officials. Now, this is a story that was uncovered initially by Brett Baer and Catherine Herridge of Fox News. They said that Samantha Power, made the request to unmask the 260 names in 1 year alone, including, and this is important, the period of time between the presidential election and the day of inauguration. Now, obviously, the first primary question on this would be why? Why? What in the world? Why would she, of all people, need those names? Because she had no operational duties for either intelligence gathering or counterintelligence investigations. Yet her requests apparently were approved. And then the second question, obviously, and this, by the way, is there's an excellent article. It was in the New York Post back on September 24th. Actually, that was just yesterday. My, how days run together. Anyway, but the second obvious question would be, what did Samantha Power do with those names? And by the way, Michael Goodwin was the author of that New York Post column under the heading, under the title, "It's Time for Power to Come Clean About Her Unmasking Requests." But this is not a minor issue. This is not a minor point that the names of some people who were involved in President Trump's campaign or his administration were unmasked and then leaked to the anti-Trump media, who breathlessly reported on the so-called collusion, the lack thereof, the evidence lack thereof of collusion with Russia and even treason. It's not a stretch to wonder if Power was behind any of those leaks. Again, this by author Michael Goodwin in a New York Post posting publication. The first two questions go directly to the heart of the simmering scandal about whether Obama's FBI targeted President Donald Trump along with his associates to help elect Hillary Clinton. And writes Mr. Goodwin, question number three is far more reaching. How much spying is there on foreigners here that 260 Americans that we know of were caught in this net? Are so many Americans really engaging in suspicious activity with foreign officials? Or does a guy who delivers pizza to a Russian diplomat instantly become a person of interest to our government, making it open season on his privacy? This writes Michael Goodwin, and that's a great question. And he does write that he's got no answers to any of these questions. But however, more troubling, neither does Congress. Neither does the Trump administration. Now, the media that was so hot and bothered when our intelligence gatherers used international banking regulations to follow terrorist financing, they are showing no concern whatsoever when information collected on American citizens by those same techniques become public. Of course, if the individuals involved with Donald Trump were the villains instead of the victims, that would be big news, right? And this is a perfect example of how media bias blinds the left-wing news organizations. And this is the, how, I mean, this is double standards. These are double standards. And as Michael Goodwin wrote the previous week, it's possible that we are witnessing the unfolding of one of the great, the biggest scandals in American political history, because it does seem very much so, increasingly likely, that Donald Trump's claim that Obama tapped his phones is true. And he asks, how else to explain the report that Paul Manafort, now in the crosshairs of special counsel Robert Mueller, was the target of a FISA warrant and that his communications had been intercepted? If nothing else, it means the claim by Obama officials that Manafort and other Trump associates had been incidentally picked up in intelligence gathering exposed as a lie. In other words, there was nothing incidental about it. They were the targets, and it was a political maneuver. This is weaponizing the intelligence services for political gain, for political purposes. And this happens in banana republics, and this is exactly what Obama and Clinton individually and together, collectively, have attempted to turn the United States of America into. You know, Mr. Goodwin also asserts that it may also be a criminal lie, because some of those assertions were made under oath to Congress, the assertions that, you know, all this, there was nothing happened. In addition, or besides Manafort, who had been Trump's campaign chairman before being forced out? Carter Page, briefly a campaign advisor, also reportedly was the target of a FISA warrant, meaning that the FBI suspected he was acting as a foreign agent or spy. So those right there are two lies, at least that we know of. Now, were others whose names were leaked, for example, General Michael Flynn, Jared Kushner, also targeted by the FBI during and even after the 2016 campaign? The implications here, writes Goodwin, and I so state, are enormous, especially with so much of the public already distrustful of the government and very, very wary of eroding privacy protections. The outrage at the hacking of Equifax, for example, and other commercial firms is understandable, but it is a far more serious breach of trust if government surveillance programs were abused for political dirty tricks. This will make Watergate, in my view, look like nothing. But you know, where are the Woodwards and Bernsteins? And I say that somewhat tongue-in-cheek. Here, you're not going to find them. You're not going to see. You're not going to find them because they're the only, and I use that as an example, the only Woodward and Bernsteins to be found in the corporate media can be found in the form of Sean Hannity, Judge Jeanine, to an extent, Tucker Carlson. And this is why I have been, as well as Peter Barry-Chaka, who writes for the Hageman Report, for example, this is an American thinker. This is why we have been so protective of Sean Hannity. Because in the corporate venue, he is the only one that's addressing these issues, along with Tucker Carlson and other occasional political talking heads. But this is why it's so important. The true Woodward and Bernsteins, if I would continue to use that as an example. And again, so I'm gonna get some heat on that. But look, just to understand, I'm using that as, of course, an analogous to seeking the truth. Can be found, will be found in the corporate or in the alternative or honest media. Shows like this one. I beg of you, even if you don't like me, if you don't like this show, then find a show that you're comfortable with in the new media, in the alternative media, that is not encumbered by the requirements, by the collectivism, by the communist stranglehold over the media. Find a program and listen and soak in all the information you can. Because I will say here and now, we are living, again, in the most perilous times. Now, what can we do about this? We all have to unite. You know, we can vote with our feet. We can, as Christian conservatives, as conservatives, as political conservatives, moral conservatives, fiscal conservatives, whatever, and love, well, supporters of the Constitution. I was going to say lovers of the Constitution, but supporters of the Constitution. We can make a difference. We can make a difference just by showing up. The problem is we haven't shown up. And I think many of you will agree. If conservatives are the most tolerant of people out there, to a fault, I will say, we tolerate too much. And I've often said this. The problem in the United States of America is not a problem of intolerance. It is a problem of tolerance. We tolerate too much. In future programs, I just want to mention, in future programs, I'm going to be digging deep into what Obama has done, the treason, in my view, by Obama and Clinton. Folks, thanks so much for listening. Share this program. Please share this program. Social media, social feed. Tell others about it. May God bless you today. And don't forget to tune into the Hageman Report tonight, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time.
The Doug Hageman Radio Show is brought to you by The Hageman Report. Tune in to The Hageman Report weekdays, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, go to HagmanReport.com. That's HagmanReport.com.